Brett Veach has never been scared to pick up the phone. He's a general manager, and I think he's the best in the game. So some names that you'll hear over the next couple of days. Ooh. You look at Amari Cooper making a lot of money in Cleveland. Like, do you not call up Andrew Berry and say, what would you be willing to? I look at DeAndre Hopkins in Tennessee. Makes a ton of money, but is there something we can work out contract-wise? I said this, and I got a lot of pushback. It doesn't come from the Rams guys, but I would call on Cooper Kupp. I would see. I would call every team. I would call 31 teams.
Peter Schrager on the Chiefs and the spot they find themselves in with both Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice looking like they're going to miss extended periods of time. We know Brown's out for the year. Rice, it's feared, will be. Was looking up last night's game, the Seahawks and the Lions.
Mm-hmm.
And fans of Everybody Eats would be very happy. Seattle completed passes to 10 players.
Ten different players
caught a pass. The Seahawks also...
including A.J. Barner, who's just stealing fantasy points from everybody out there.
He caught two, including a
touchdown. Two touchdowns? Two catches.
Okay. And one touchdown.
Yeah. Brutal. He tried to jump over a guy.
They had... The Seahawks had the most first downs ever in a game in which a team lost.
Really?
Yep. 38 first downs.
Timo Risk from Pro Football Focus was getting yelled at for this take on Twitter this morning. He basically said, if we're calling Jared Goff's game the perfect game, what do we call the game of the quarterback who was the best quarterback on the field last night?
Geno threw for 395.
Yeah.
And a touchdown. And a pick.
He did some... There was... one play where he like spun out of a sack and then found Lockett down the field, or maybe it was Smith and Jigba down the field. He had some crazy good passes in that game.
Well, Seattle's a good model here if we're looking at a way that I'd like the Bills to be built. I mean, they have a couple tight ends they throw to sometimes, but not much. And they throw to the backs.
Yeah.
But they really are Everybody Eats. JSN, 8 catches. DK Metcalf, 7 catches. Lockett, 5 catches. Charbonnet, 5 catches. Kenneth Walker, 4. Bobo, 3. Like, this whole idea that you're going to be good as long as you spread it around has always been a little bit dicey to me. You're good if you spread it around as long as those players are good.
Well, them being good is important here.
It's very important. DK Metcalf got 7 for 104. He also had a fumble in the game. Whereas, you know... If your DK Metcalf guy in your offense that is Everybody Eats is Mac Hollins, that's not the same Everybody Eats. You know?
No, right. Like, what's better? The Everybody Eats that, by the way, Houston talked about before their season, where Houston's a team like this too, where Collins gets 10, Diggs gets 7, Dell gets 5, Schultz gets 4. Or the Bills, or a team that has 9 guys catch it and 7 of them get 1.
Yeah.
What's better? Because in one instance, everybody is still leading. You just have 4 guys that are really good that are all getting a big workload. Or would you rather have 9 guys where 7 of them are replacement level and they're all catching one pass? Like, to me, you can have Everybody Eats easily and just not have, you know, or just have guys that are pretty good. Have multiple guys that are good.
Well,
like, part of... maybe why this got brought up and has been like catching fire is last year didn't feel as much like Everybody Eats because early in the year it was only Diggs that was good. If they had had, you know,
other
players,
you
mentioned Jameson Williams. I guess he was suspended for gambling. If they had drafted
Christian Watson,
Zay Flowers, it wouldn't have been Everybody Eats because Diggs wouldn't have been on his own.
Right.
It wouldn't have been Gabe Davis as your second best receiver, who you're seeing in Jacksonville right now. Without Josh Allen, that guy is not very good. He's not a very good wide receiver.
803-0550. Saw Benjamin Solak, back to the Chiefs here for a minute. He's got a piece up about how he doesn't think trading for a receiver for them will help.
Like for who? For the Bills?
For the Chiefs.
For the Chiefs.
Like, it's not going to save them. Trading for a receiver is not going to save the Chiefs. So I'll get you a little bit of that because I think that's something that, of course... Here's always part of the mix. If the Bills thought this was a transition year, right? It's week 4. Now I'm back to talking like they can win the Super Bowl. So if you have been a little tired of the doom and gloom off of one loss to Baltimore, which I don't really think has been much doom and gloom, which has been, you know, people talking about they got hammered. If the transition year all of a sudden looks like, hey, take a look around. What? The Chiefs are toast. Okay, what else? The Texans don't look like they looked. The Jaguars are dead. The Bengals are 1-3.
Dolphins and Jets both.
The Dolphins are definitely dead. The Dolphins are toast.
And the Jets don't look good.
The Jets don't look any good. 5 weeks from now, we might think it's Buffalo and Baltimore. And the Chiefs are going to make it, but they don't look the same. So then Brandon Bean has to ask himself a question like, all right, well, you were about to say transition year.
Yeah.
Now we're halfway through the season. And a good example of this is the year they break the drought. What do? They're 5-1.
Yep. 5-2. 5-2. Yep.
That's a rebuild year. Trade away good players, get draft picks, rebuild. 5-2. Trade for Kelvin Benjamin, baby. Let's go make the playoffs.
Yeah.
You become a buyer. And I wonder if the Bills, in any circumstance, would think they could be into a buyer. You know, GMs love to say stuff like you're never one player away, when in reality you're always a series of one players away. And I'm not sure what the price they'd be willing to pay is. We've thrown out the idea of Amari Cooper, or maybe it's linebacker help, or maybe it's a defensive end, or maybe it's a safety.
Or a kicker. It
could be a kicker. So I just find it interesting. And here are the Chiefs, their receiver problems. What could they really do?
They're also, we've talked about a lot of their different weapons for this. Like, part of how you'll get to, hey, should they trade for a receiver at the deadline or a weapon at the deadline is if we get more games like last Sunday where it feels like you're wanting that. You're wanting one more guy that you can just count on, that you know is dangerous, and ideally somebody that runs down the field. I was definitely surprised that through three games, they looked as good as they did without really any semblance of a downfield passing threat. At least not a player that is dangerous in that way. Like Marquez Valdes-Scantling, in theory, is that type of player. He just is not a productive player anymore. And that was evident last year in Kansas City when he had 300 yards on the field all year for them. He's just not, he doesn't rate in that way. They don't have a legitimately good player that is threatening down the field. I don't think right now. And, you know, that's a different, this is a different element of this, but you mentioned like the up the seam routes that we saw from Dalton Kincaid in training camp or in the preseason or in the playoff game last year against Pittsburgh. That was the touchdown he caught, right? He's just running up the seam, past the linebackers. He's using his athleticism and he's down the field. And part of the plan, the blueprint of, hey, this can work without Diggs this year, this can work without a true number one, I think was based in Dalton Kincaid's going to be a star tight end for you.
How far off of that is he?
He's got 100 yards in four games. I don't know. Is he making a substantial impact? He's getting attention. Defenses are paying attention to him. Yep. At least Arizona was for sure. Like, he is a threat. But he is not putting up giant production, right?
He's, no.
Is he on pace to match what he even did last year? He's not, by the way. Last year, 42 yards per game. This year, 33 yards per game. If I told you Dalton Kincaid's stat line was going to see regression, that would be if I told you that in May or June or July, you would have thought that's a red flag.
It's probably worth pointing out they have played two full halves of football.
That is, no, you're right. That's right. Because I made that point about Shakir, too.
Yeah.
He's really played more like three games.
Yeah, the second half against Miami and the second half against Jacksonville. You know, that removes some.
But we didn't bring him up earlier when, like, where's there more to come from? There is more there. There better be more there, right? More than 30 yards a game?
What's his career high for targets in a game?
He had 7 against Baltimore. Do we want to bet that's near the top? Kincaid's career high in targets in a game through 20 games. He had 8 in Miami to close last season. He had 8 in Kansas City last year in the regular season. He had 11 in Cincinnati. That's his career high. He had 11 targets against Cincinnati. So one time he's at double digit. But you like the Chiefs are going to turn to Kelce here, right?
Yep,
like
yep.
They're out of ideas around him. So it's it has to be Kelce. We can't kind of slow play him and have him be fresh by the playoffs. Like we need him.
Kincaid is 12th in targets among tight ends right now.
Okay.
But again, I almost want to, I don't know if I should give him a full extra game here. He really has been I don't want to say sold. Like, people, it's believable. The talent, the ability. But we just don't see that many scripted plays, game plans that run through him
right.
the way it was kind of sold like he would. Think of him like a receiver. The reality is, you want to play that game. If he's a receiver, it's way worse.
Yeah.
Your expectations for tight ends are 85 yards is a really good game.
I was going to say, you just compared him to tight ends. If you compared him to the receivers, would he be like 80th?
It would be,
you'd
be furious.
Yeah.
Like, that's the whole thing about think of him as a receiver. Like, tight ends don't put up receiver numbers usually. And if you're going to use this guy like they wanted to when they drafted him, if you wanted me to think of him like a receiver, you drafted a receiver in the first round, and in his second year, he's got 13 targets. Mm-hmm. Or, sorry, 13 catches in four games. I'd be like, what's wrong?
Right. So maybe there's more to unlock there?
I would think so.
There has to be, or it will be disappointing.
It's another part of the everybody eats thing. It's like, wait a minute, why? Why is everybody doing it? I've got a first-round matchup nightmare tight end. He should be getting a focal point of this offense.
Yeah.
Which, you know, defenses are focusing on him to a degree as well.
Well, that would be a fear, I think, is are the Bills' top weapons capable of having more attention paid to them and still thriving? Like, you can sit up here and say that forcing the ball to Diggs over and over and over was a bad thing for the offense. The one thing I don't think you can argue is that having a player that talented, especially in the first 3.5 years, if you want to just use that timeline, having a player that good, that talented, drawing attention, drawing double teams, drawing the number one corner over to his end, it makes things easier for the rest of them. I think it would make things easier for Khalil Shakir for a full season if he had a legit elite number one somewhere else on the offense. I think it would probably be easier for Dalton Kincaid. That's not to say, by the way, they can't do it. It'll be a little harder, I think, because if you're a defense going in to play the Bills, if there was an elite number one, you would have to focus your attention there and have to say, we're just going to have to live with Kincaid and Shakir. Like, we're going to have to hope that we can match them up one-on-one more often, that we can kind of pay less attention to them and hope that they don't beat us. But that's what we have to do. Versus now, you go into a game playing the Bills, if I'm a defensive coordinator, if I'm the Texans getting ready to play them on Sunday, I don't have to worry about that elite number one. So I'm saying, all right, guys, we're going to stop Shakir, we're going to stop Kincaid. We're going to make it harder on those two to get open. We're going to make it harder on the Bills to get those guys involved. We'll live with Mac Hollins getting 6 targets because we're going to take these two guys away. That is something that is going to, I think, hurt them more this year than when they've had Diggs in the past. Doesn't mean they can't overcome it. I just think they have to find a way to get those guys open with more attention being paid to them.
803-0550. If you want to throw this our way, throw any thought on this, on what you took from the Baltimore game, and this general conversation about whether that's Kincaid or Diggs for this week.
It'll be Diggs week.
It is Diggs week. I have this.
There will be cameras all on him and Allen and pregame stuff, right? Everything.
No. I have this thing where I remember him positively as a player that we really liked.
Yeah.
That's just me, though.
Will that change for everybody as it gets further away? Like, time heals all wounds, right? Like,
it doesn't heal. Time does not heal all wounds because Eichel will never be remembered well, right? I also don't hate him.
But the difference there is the team stunk.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
Right,
maybe not all wounds. It will heal this one. Because they were great. He's the best receiver in the team's history.
Arguably.
Like, he...
Simon Molds and Andre.
Yeah, like, Hasek was hated when he left, right? And now he's remembered fondly.
Yes.
So
there are some that didn't blame Hasek same way, like, your organization's not serious.
I just think the further and further away you get from it, I mean, not too long from now, maybe 5 years, I don't know, but eventually Diggs won't even be playing anymore, and it'll be looking back on his career and the crazy numbers he put up and the fact that they did. I mean, if McDermott is going to get credit from some, not everybody, of, hey, ended the drought, totally respect what he did for the team, respect what he did for the community, right? Like, that sentiment is out there about McDermott breaking the drought and bringing the Bills back to respectability. Like, Diggs is a part of that. Diggs did not win the Super Bowl here, but he was a part of the team ascending from nowhere, drought, down in the dumps, didn't even feel like a real team, to now they are on prime time all the time. They are a great team. They're winning all the games. They're winning all the divisions. I don't know. I just think it's, people are still living in the moment with him, and it's not, for him, it's not going to last. Maybe you're right about Eichel.
We have any revenge games come up? Skinner. Here's one that's, I think he's, as we're like talking about guys that have left, Skinner in Edmonton, that starts soon. He's skating in a line with Dreisaitl.
Yes, he is. And he's going to score 30 goals.
I think an awful lot of Sabres fans will be very happy for Jeff Skinner. I don't think there's really much.
He would get cheered when he comes back, I bet.
Yeah, I think so for sure.
He was a well-liked player.
Why isn't he, you know, what's to dislike? His defensive zone metrics. Like, okay, that stuff doesn't really move the needle for booze.
Right, right.
So I think he'll be...
Do the Bills have a home game against somebody important that's coming up? Not Poyer will be back, right? For the first time. The Houston game not being at home is
huge.
Yeah. Because that would be...
Can we be a little thankful for that?
That the game's not at home?
Yes.
I mean, how bad do you think it really would have been? You think like every time he caught the ball, there would have been boos?
Yes.
Okay, and he would have got big ones before the game. Do they do tribute videos? Would they have gotten a tribute video like before the game or something?
Great question. No idea.
I don't know if they really do that in the NFL. Did Gabe Davis get one at the Jaguar game? I was not there. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Josh, was there a Gabe Davis tribute video at the Jaguars game?
Not that I remember, but okay. I do remember one of his catches. There was a lot of boos.
Yes, that I heard.
I joined in just because I was wearing a Gabe Davis jersey. I didn't want to be seen as a sympathizer or something.
Yeah, there were definitely Gabe Davis boos, so it would be very different, I think, if this game were in Buffalo on Sunday.
Yes.
Nothing very, for Mitch Morse, though, that I saw.
That's probably expected. Revenge games the rest of the season, I'm not really seeing much. Part of it is all their guys are like, well, Hyde's not playing, I guess. How many of their guys that left are actually like key important players on other teams? Maybe Tremaine Edmonds when he comes back eventually? I don't know.
Edmonds. When do the Bears come here?
Not this year.
No.
And they play that division? No, they don't. They just play the Lions. So multiple years. It'll be multiple years before they're back.
Thursday Night Football is Falcons and Bucks.
Okay.
Not bad.
Do you see what the Monday night game next or the Monday night game next week is?
No.
It's a standalone. Okay. You guess where it is. Guess where the game is.
I'm sorry. Of course. I did see this because watching last night when they did the commercial, hey, coming up next Monday, we'll be at Arrowhead. Oh, shocker. Great. Excited for that.
I think Saints Chiefs.
I think the Saints will beat them. I think the Saints will beat the Chiefs.
Is it not the most annoying thing in the league right now that the Chiefs are 4-0?
It's one of them.
They don't look right.
Do you know who the worst offense in football is, by the way? According to how often they turn, it's not the Chiefs. How often they turn possession into a new set of downs?
Who's the worst?
You get a first down.
Is it New England?
It's the Chargers.
Really?
It's the Chargers. And if you watch the Chiefs and Chargers, the Chargers had a 10-0 lead, and they needed to win that game 10-0 because they were not going to score again.
Yeah. Did we bet them?
No.
I wanted to bet against them this year. They are totally leaning into the ground and pound game, right? Totally leaning into it. They want to run the ball. And
it's horrible to watch.
It's so unfun.
And Justin Herbert has no help, and he's hurt.
Him being hurt, too, I think, is a fact. His ankle is screwed up. But here are the Chargers again. Just like somebody challenged the Chiefs in that division. And I'm always staring at the Chargers for that. You're the team that should do it. You've got a talented quarterback that you should be able to put up a fight. And they're just never close. So lucky the Chiefs get to play in that division.
Yeah.
Although, to be fair, the Bills' division's not looking great right now either, so... It's not like the Bills have a giant challenge in front of them.
The North and the South look like
the two best divisions
in the AFC.
Yeah.
All right. Counting down the days to Bills Texans, and also just a couple days from Sabre season opener, Friday, 1 o'clock?
Friday at 1, and then Saturday at 10 a.m.
Love it. Set up against some Premier League action, or is the Premier League off next week?
I think they have games.
They do have games.
I had some friends that were asking last night, like, hey, should we go out for the Sabre game on Saturday at 10 a.m.? And one bar was mentioned that is like a soccer bar. Like, oh, I bet they'll have the game. I'm like, you're going to walk in wanting the Sabre game, and you're going to be met with like Brentford and Fulham. And are they turning that game off for you
No.
for the Sabres game? I'm not sure.
Saturday, 10 a.m.?
Saturday at 10 a.m.
Arsenal plays.
Oh! What are you going to watch? Double screen?
Yeah, sure.
Who they play?
Someone big? No.
Okay.
Southampton, who just got beat by Bournemouth.
You could skip that. They'll win that game.
Maybe. Listen, if the Sabres go 2-0 to start, you will have a full 5 days to hype yourself up for the home opener against the Kings.
Mm-hmm.
And Lindy's return, like, just, I want the Sabres, of course, to win their games. But if they can win these first two or look exciting in these first two, get juice into the building early this year, it'd be nice. It's a long season.
Is it?
And they've been out of it, you know, early before.
How important are these two games then? Because of the 5 day break in between before the home opener? Because if you win, there'll be excitement. You win both, especially. There'll be a lot of excitement. On the flip end,
if you lose both... Then it's just Bill season.
Then we just ignore it for 5 days and like, oh, Sabres home opener?
Yeah.
That's probably right.
803-0550 to join us. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.